You're with Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. TNT.
Hello, and welcome to the Misty Winston Show right here on TNT Radio. I truly appreciate you tuning in to hang out with me today, and we do have another amazing show lined up. But first, a rant. So, all right, I'm going to rant to you. I'm going to talk to you about United States foreign policy. And so if you are somebody that thinks that the United States foreign policy is a good thing, maybe shake that off for a second and open your mind, because it's not. So in the United States, we have people who can't afford to see a doctor. We have people who can't afford to feed their kids. We have people living on the streets. We have people right now who can't afford to put gas in their cars to even make it to work. And there are many reasons why this makes me mad, but here is one specific reason why this makes me mad. In the same week that a $48 billion bill to give aid to small businesses for COVID relief was shot down, we have a government who, without hesitation, without discussion, without any hand-wringing or proclamations of how are we going to pay for that, they voted to send another $40 billion to Ukraine. Another $40 billion to Ukraine. So we have so far sent around $54 billion into Ukraine with little to no oversight in an effort to prolong this proxy war with Russia. And that's in just 3 months. That's 3 months. 3 months. In 2021, Russia's entire military budget was $65.9 billion. So within 3 months' time, we have sent nearly 82% of the entire Russian military budget to a country that has literal Nazis forming sanctioned battalions in their military. And that doesn't even include the weapons that we have been flooding into the region. Our elected officials put on performances. They declare that we must do this in order to help the people of Ukraine, and that we're also concerned about the people of Ukraine. That is beyond absurd. Nothing about prolonging an unwinnable war with a nuclear power, which is devastating the people of Ukraine on numerous fronts, is helpful to the people of Ukraine. Elected officials in this country don't even care about our own people. So the idea that I'm to believe that we are doing this out of the kindness of our hearts because we're ever so concerned for the people of Ukraine is offensive to me. If we cared about the people of Ukraine, first of all, let's start here. We wouldn't have interfered in their business in the first place and created the environment which set this conflict off, because don't get it twisted. This is not an unprovoked war. This is something that has been brewing for years that we have had a very heavy hand in. If we cared about the people of Ukraine, we would be advocating for diplomacy, period. End of story. That's what we would be doing. War is a racket. It is a money laundering scheme meant to further enrich the worst people amongst us. Journalist and publisher Julian Assange spoke on this years ago in relation to Afghanistan. I want you to take a listen to this, because he's so right. It pertains to this as well. So take a listen to this clip.
Because the goal is not to completely subjugate Afghanistan. The goal is to use Afghanistan to wash money out of the tax bases of the United States, out of the tax bases of European countries, through Afghanistan and back into the hands of a transnational security elite. That is the goal, i.e. the goal is to have an endless war, not a successful war.
And he is 100% right. In that clip, he's discussing Afghanistan. But you can replace Afghanistan with any of the other numerous countries that we are currently destroying and exploiting across the globe, whether it's Syria or Somalia or Ethiopia or Yemen or Palestine. And yes, in Ukraine. We are not helping the people of Ukraine. It's silly. We are causing irreparable damage for the financial benefit of a handful of psychopaths. We are using the people of Ukraine as cannon fodder to foreign U.S. Interests. I can't think of anything more despicable than that, to use a country's people as pawns in a game for money and resources and influence. That's disgusting. That is U.S. foreign policy. That's what we do. We use the might of our military to oppress and subjugate the world as we steal their resources and destroy their lands. They don't want to help anyone but themselves here. And by they, I just mean those in power. They gets tossed around a lot, and people, you know, roll their eyes about that. But it's very difficult to define the they. But it's really just people in positions of power at multiple levels. And they all have their own reasons for going along with this kind of a thing. But they don't want to help anyone but themselves. They don't care about Ukraine. They don't care about the people of this country. So the idea that, you know, Joe Biden cares what happens to the people in Ukraine is absurd. As Julian Assange said, they don't want a successful war. They want an endless war. They want this to go on forever. They want this to, so they can can launder money. They want this to be able to further, first of all, they want to be able to, impact Russia militarily, financially, economically, all of that stuff, obviously. But it's also a way that they can, shoot money through systems, and it comes out the other side in the hands of, incredibly wealthy CEOs of companies like Raytheon. And that's what this is about. They do not want a successful war. They just want an endless war. It doesn't matter where that war is waged, as long as they can use it for their own personal benefit. There really is nothing more disgusting to me than U.S. foreign policy. It's so gross and oppressive. And we're not the good guys. I know that might hurt a lot of people's feelings. But we are not the good guys. We are never the good guys, unfortunately. I know that a lot of us have been propagandized literally from birth to think that the U.S. is a good, great country that does the right thing and wants to spread democracy. We don't have democracy here. It's absurd that anybody thinks that, first of all, that we could spread democracy when we don't even know what that is. Here we are. I mean, this is where we are. So again, they do not want a successful war. They want an endless war. War is a racket, and that's why this makes me mad. And this is TNT Radio.
Digging deeper on the facts.
It's a source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We are joined this hour by Kit Knightley. Kit is a journalist and the editor of the amazing independent outlet Off Guardian. You can follow him on Twitter at Kit_Knightley, and you can find Off Guardian on Twitter at Off Guardian Zero, as well as at off-guardian.org. Kit, thanks so much for being here today.
Hi, Misty. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you. I've been a big fan of Off Guardian's work for a long time. The censorship that you guys have to deal with is crazy. Just clicking on an article, if you want to go read an article written by Kit at Off Guardian, you get an immediate warning. Are you really sure you want to read this? That's pretty intense, Kit.
They're really sneaky about it as well, because they say, we've blocked this site, and it could be for one of the four reasons. It could be that it's full of viruses that are going to destroy your computer, or it could be that it's going to deliberately lead you into seeing something violent, or it could be they're saying something we don't agree with. It's one of those three. Doesn't matter. Don't think about it.
Just scare, be afraid, be very afraid, which is, and it happens also not just when you click on articles just to go in your browser or whatever to read them, but it also happens on Twitter if you try to click on them, or if you even share them. I think that it comes up with like a warning. It won't even let you see like the thumbnail or any of that stuff. It's like an immediate warning. So you guys have really, how long has that been going on?
That's relatively recent. I think that was a COVID thing back in the prime COVID days, when it was still Wild West time, 2020.
Yeah, the COVID years have been really something else. The unbelievable amount of censorship that they have managed to convince everybody is necessary through COVID is really scary to me. I hate censorship of all kinds, and they have really upped the ante since 2020.
Oh, absolutely. And not just censorship. COVID has been I can't think of the expression. I think it's a stalking course for what, basically something that they've used it to lay out massive pullbacks on rights in all sorts of areas.
Yeah.
They've normalized so much. They've normalized censorship. They've normalized coercion. They've normalized essentially blackmail. It's been a real hit to human rights in general. It plays into what you were talking about in your, and I'm using your word here, so no offense, your rant.
No, I like it.
when you talked about the unwinnable war, but the COVID was an extension of that. It was a brilliant unwinnable war, because you don't even need an enemy. It's just it's just a virus, and it doesn't really do anything. But instead of buying missiles that you have to use, you buy vaccines. And what's more, is a vaccine you have to use 4 or 5 times in the space of a year and a half. It's great.
Yeah. That doesn't work. That doesn't prevent you from spreading it. That doesn't keep you from getting it. Maybe there's, some argument that it might keep you from getting more severe symptoms. Maybe that's dubious too, in my opinion. But
the fundamental thing is based on that test, and the test doesn't work. So nobody knows who's had it. Nobody knows who hasn't had it. Nobody knows if it is definitely even a definable thing. It's a brilliant piece of psy operative.
It really is.
It's genius.
Yes, you're so right about that, because and we will never know. We will never know. You know, people keep saying there's 1 million dead. No, there's not. We will never know how many people actually died of COVID, if anybody. I mean, people are going to come for me and, oh, you're such a conspiracy theorist. No, I'm just saying that we know for sure that they're lying to us. They've been caught how many times now over the course of the past 2 years, really?
They're not even in their lying, in their telling the truth. They admit. They say, we've redefined cause of death to mean anybody that died after testing positive. But that means it's meaningless. That's like defining anybody that dies within a month of going swimming as having drowned. It's totally meaningless.
Yeah. Yes. And that's super, you know, the whole, did they die with or from? That's exactly. All very nefarious. And it's all, and all of the tracking, all of the numbers are very, none of this stuff. Again, we're never going to know the reality of what COVID is, who had it, who died from it, who didn't. And that's really unfortunate and scary, because they've been, as you said, they've been very effective with this thing. It is a genius psyop that we have all been living through over the past 2 years. They've really, and you're right, they do like an invisible enemy. The War on Terror was another example.
I wrote an article about that, like marking the anniversary of the War on Terror back in September. It was the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And like, it's, you can see COVID is very much an extension of the War on Terror, a war on a, like, an ephemeral concept that they never have to win. It's brilliant. It works for them completely.
Yeah. They never have to win. It never has to end. And you know, it's they can always continually use fear mongering to escalate the situation whenever it benefits them. I think that what you just said too about the way that they've changed the definitions of words, that is been really kind of crazy to witness, that people are just okay with them changing they changed the definition of the word vaccine and nobody blinked an eye. What?
Yeah, they just say, it's a vaccine. And you say, oh, great. So it stops transmission. And they say, no. Oh, so, no. But it will stop me getting it. Oh, no, it doesn't do that either. So what does it do? Well, if you get it, you might not feel as ill. But that's not what a vaccine is. That's never been what vaccine
it is now. That is now. I mean, they changed the definition to suit their agenda. So, I mean, that's really scary. It makes me feel a little bit hopeless. You know, I vacillate between, I think most people who do what we do, or who, you know, like, I'm an activist, people who are in the activist community, we vacillate between like hope and, you know, absolutely hopeless. And the way that they have been so successful with the COVID narrative and pushing the agenda forward is really troubling to me. And then we have the situation now where everybody is so distracted by other things happening in the world, mostly Ukraine, that, you know, they're able to continue this agenda. I mean, we have the WHO treaty that's, you know, being batted around, and that's all it's happening very much kind of underneath the surface. Nobody's really paying a whole lot of attention to that. And it feels as if it's being used as a distraction. And, you know, I think that they're going to ramp it back up, because right before Ukraine, Kit, we were starting to build momentum on pushback, on a resistance to this thing.
And it's, I think that is, honestly, you say vacillating between hope and despair, but in some ways, I think that is a sign of hope. I think the fact they had to change tack to Ukraine was a decision made because they were no longer getting the traction on COVID that they wanted. And I think the fact they're now doing their pandemic treaty more like hoping we don't talk about it and putting it on the front page and making sure everybody claps, I think that's a sign that actually people were waking up to it. And we did have an impact collectively, the alternate media, not just Off Guardian.
No. I mean, Off Guardian has, you were one of the first outlets to really be on top of it. So, I mean, credit where it's due. Obviously, it's not just Off Guardian, but yes, credit where it's due. You were really quick on it. And I think that, you know, we as a collective, we're all kind of on the right track. I think a lot, I honestly think that COVID, as horrible as it has been, is also a bit of a blessing in disguise, because I think it really smacked a lot of people in the face. I think a lot of people who were previously kind of unsure about, you know, what was really going down with governmental institutions and these, you know, like the CDC and the WHO and all of these other places, I think that really kind of shook them into a reality that these are these are organizations that cannot be trusted under any circumstances. And I think that there's been like a really significant number of people who have kind of woken up to that fact. I hate that woken up, but you know, that's, I don't know what else to say.
It's the only expression that really means it has. There was a lot of awakening, a grand awakening for a lot of people who COVID became the thin end of a wedge and they became exploring other things. You know, it was actually interesting and quite heartening to see in a lot of places.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Because it wasn't just that they kind of realized what was going on with COVID, but it really did make people start to examine other things and really start to dig in. I know a lot of people who have been entirely radicalized by the 2 years of COVID, which is great. I'm into it. Let's do that. Let's have more of that.
Absolutely. If more people, and as a result of COVID, this has happened, but I think the most important thing, and certainly what Off-Guardian's mission from the beginning has been, is simply to engender in people a healthy amount of cynicism. There's this feeling that politicians and the press exploit, which is this kind of inherent trust in people, that if something is said by enough people, it simply must be somehow at least partially true, or some grand force would stop them saying it. Like, they can't possibly tell a lie that big, so it must be partly true. And I think COVID will have knocked people out of that a lot. Sometimes, a lot of the time, it's just a lie. It isn't an exaggeration. It isn't a slight piece of hyperbole. It's a lie. They make stuff up. And the more people realize that, the more success the alternate media will have.
Yes. And I think, honestly, something that has also given me a great deal of hope is the obvious thirst that people have for alternative sources of information, people who are examining, other things outside of approved narratives. Mainstream media is dying. That's why there's such a desperate grab on the narrative, and why there's so much censorship, and why they have the attacks on independent media have increased so significantly, because mainstream media is dying. People do not trust them. And that's another institution that I think over the past 2 years has lost a significant amount of, I think a lot of people who otherwise might have kind of, you know, maybe they thought that Rachel Maddow or, Chris Hayes or whatever, maybe sometimes they do some good work and maybe they don't always get it. I think a lot of people are like, okay, no, we're done with these people at this point, which is good. That's great. I think mainstream media is one of the greatest threats to humanity right now. I know that sounds serious, but I really do. It's the way that they're able to lie and manipulate, that really they manufacture reality. As you just said, if enough people say it's true, then it must be true, right? And a lot of people buy into that. So it's interesting. I do think a lot of people are starting to come to terms with that they can't be trusted either at all. Not at all. None. Zero. You know? They will every once in a while allow some truth to be told. Or, you know, they'll let Chris Hayes cover Yemen for 7 minutes every 5 years. And they do that intentionally, because then that gives people that little thing where, okay, yeah, sometimes they tell the truth. So, but I think that that's over for a lot of people, which is good. That's good to hear. Which gives alternative media the space to grow, if they'll let it.
Yeah.
Which is an entirely other issue. Yeah. But there is a lot of censorship that we have to combat. I mean, you're experiencing it. You get warnings just trying to click on your articles.
And I could think of four or five other outlets have been kicked off Patreon recently. Patreon is, cracking down hard on that. YouTube is taking down basically everybody. The campaign of censorship for YouTube is insane.
Yes.
Not just political stuff, but demonetizing ordinary people. It's kind of alter their platform to make it more about corporate content than it is about individual content. And in that way, of course, it's all the alternate news people who have made James Corbett, and I can't think of any of the names off the top of my head, have all been kicked off YouTube, especially in the last year. It's got terrible.
Yes. YouTube is horrific. Everybody needs to diversify, get away from YouTube. There are lots of other smaller, listen, it's not, they're not going to be the size of YouTube. It's not going to be, but we have to help those other sites grow, like Rockfin or Rumble or Odyssey or whatever. There's lots of them. Substack, whatever. I don't care what it is. But my friend Andy says it's like playing platform whack-a-mole. And like trying to get on as many platforms as possible to avoid, you know, getting crushed by the censorship. But I mean, YouTube is by far the worst offender. The guy, I think it was the product manager or whatever of YouTube or product develop, I don't know what he was, but some dude gave some speech where he said that YouTube is an open platform that doesn't have gatekeepers. And we don't like to try to be the arbiters of truth. And I'm like, you're full of it. What are you talking about?
But we will remove dislikes from videos if Disney asks us to.
With no recourse. Like there's, you can appeal. They'll deny your appeal sometimes instantaneously. It's, you can't ever get a hold of a human being to actually have a conversation, or they don't ever give you any.
They do the same thing at Twitter. It's kind of a way of enforcing the system without actually having to do it. They make it automated. They say it's just part of the automated appeal system. Nothing we can do about it.
Yeah. And it's, there's no recourse. You just, that's it. That's it. And you know, if you three strikes and you're out, if you get three strikes on your account, you just lose your channel entirely. And you can lose it. Again, it is fully automated. So it's like based on keywords. Like if you say the word vaccine, you could potentially get a strike and have your video taken down with no context whatsoever. And so, YouTube is by far the worst offender. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. Everybody hang tight. We're going to have more with Kit Knightley right after this here on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's John Matlin.
You said it best when you said the millennials are grabbing hold of this, you know, and I try to bring this to the forefront every time I have this conversation. If people are still drilling for gas on planet Earth, it's the same globe. So the effects are still happening. So all you're doing is paying more money to send virtue that you're the one that's not drilling. But you're still taking the product. The same earth is still getting polluted. So you're not really changing anything if you're looking at it on a bigger scale.
You know,
well, that's right.
In Nicaragua, I think the biggest problem is Latin America's, and frankly, you know, the mecca of freedom the United States has, it's called corruption. It's not communism, it's not socialism, it's not progressivism, it's called corruption.
John Matlin on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Wokeness is infiltrating churches and people don't really know what's hitting them.
Critical race theory assumes that racism is everywhere, it isn't everything. These ideologies have crept into the church.
I have grown up with this invisible kind of bag of privilege.
And I know as a white pastor, I have blind spots.
Reparations fits into the scope of the gospel.
It's a racist worldview. You're swimming in racism.
The social justice warriors say, if you're white, you are racist. And if you say that you are not a racist, then you have to be a white supremacist.
I see within evangelicalism today an attack on the very gospel itself.
Social justice doesn't have to do with justice, it has to do with Marxism.
Wokeness is now the dominant academic paradigm on many university and college campuses.
Many of our Christian universities have fallen prey.
I went to an all-black school, raised in a black context. Everything was oppression. White people are racist, cops can't be trusted, and this world is not for us, it's against us. We felt like the government owed us. I have a family, I have children, and I don't have a job. I was just, it was at the darkest point in my life.
Because I was white, would we have to divorce and separate due to my skin color?
Christianity enables people to find forgiveness and redemption. However, Marxism is completely vindictive.
There is no redeemer and there is no redemption in the religion of anti-racism.
I believe that the evangelical church today is going to have to make a decision. Are we going to submit to the culture, or are we going to remain true to the faith and take the consequences?
How the left is stealing your church. The invasion of the gospel of woke at salemnow.com.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think.
It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
In 2018, 2.9 million people died of the flu and pneumonia. In 2020, there was a 98% decline in influenza, but 2.8 million die of COVID. Data never lies. We mandate that the truth be told. TNT Radio.
Hello, welcome back to TNT Radio. You are listening to The Misty Winston Show, and this hour I am joined by journalist and editor of Off Guardian, Kit Knightley, and we're just having a chat. Whatever happens to come up, we're going to talk about it. But yeah, we were talking about censorship and the way that I keep saying it, we live in a time of unprecedented censorship, and Julian Assange has said before that censorship is always cause for celebration because it means that those at levels of power have to care about what people think so desperately that they have to attack information. And I think that that's very true, but it's going to get worse before it gets better, unfortunately. And, you know, we are in a situation where I think that the American empire is crumbling, and they are desperately trying to hold on to any sense of control over over reality. They're again, as I say, they're not just manufacturing consent at this point. They are attempting to manufacture reality, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
Really scary. Yeah,
that's true. And like, it's almost like the consent is no longer vital. What they want is for you to acknowledge their reality. And if that means violently disagreeing with it, they're okay with that, as long as you're disagreeing with it on their terms. You know, as you can say, oh, well, I'll wear my mask and I'll social distance, but I don't want to take your vaccine. That's all right on their terms. They would rather people say that than, I don't need to take your vaccine or wear your mask. This whole thing is a construct, you know?
Right.
Well, yes. It's no longer manufacturing consent. It's manufacturing, I suppose, as you'd say, it's participation in a game.
Yeah,
and with which compliance they're making up as they go along.
Yeah. Yes.
But I would disagree with something you said before. You said we're living in a time of unprecedented censorship. And I suppose that's partly true. And we're living in a time where there is more scope for censorship and therefore simply more of it. But right. Up until relatively recently in human history, it was simply a given that the people in charge would stop the people who weren't in charge from saying things. And that kind of, I think that plays into a big part of what is actually like the grander scheme of things now. Like post-World War II, you've got an unprecedented period of freedom, really, for more people than had ever really been free before in the history of the human race. You have freedom and standards of living and standards of education. And all these things, essentially, were things that the people in charge weren't really happy with and have been trying to take back slowly, a bit at a time. Refeudalization is the best way to put it. They want to get rid of the middle class and reconstruct a working class that is entirely dependent on the people in charge for their welfare.
Yes. Yes.
So we want to make us reliant on them and make us grateful for that reliance.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I think that a lot of people are missing that. So many people are, and that's been really depressing, honestly, to witness so many people. And I get it. I mean, fear is a powerful manipulator. I understand that. I understand how propaganda works and I understand how fear works. And that's why they use it. But it is really depressing to me how many people not only went along with the COVID stuff, but really allowed it to strip them of their humanity. I mean, we had people wishing death upon those who were refusing to take an experimental injection, wishing death. Like, and these are people who, you know, would otherwise claim to be good, decent people who care about other people. And you know, they wanted segregate. I mean, Noam Chomsky wanted to completely segregate the unvaccinated and let them starve. And was saying it out loud publicly. Staff,
but if they do, well, that's unfortunate, but it's really their problem, right. Apparently. Thanks for that.
Yeah, I guess they should just get vaccinated, right? No, I'm like, they should just go ahead and take this experimental injection that doesn't work, does nothing.
It was eye-opening, too, as a person who, you know, in American terms, you know, the the I can't think of the term. The spectrum is slightly different in the UK to the US in terms of left-rightness. You know, a conservative in the UK would be considered a bit of a leftist in America simply by the different standards we have for federal control and federal spending and stuff.
Right.
But as someone who would have been considered in American terms like a far-left loony socialist for most of his life, COVID was really quite an awakening to how there are dangers to that position. There are. There is a lot of potential for overreach and control. A campaigning thing in Europe, I'm not sure how much of it has made it to America, but in Europe and the UK a lot for years has been the UBI, the Universal Basic Income. I was never like totally on board with it, but I understood the argument.
Right.
Which is to say, basically, I'm not sure if you know what that is. It's the state basically paying a general subsistence to everybody.
We have that conversation here too a lot.
If that had been in place before COVID, and millions of people were receiving the UBI, that would have been tied to your vaccination status within weeks of the vaccine being available. And people would have been forced to take the vaccine or they would have lost their income.
Yes.
I mean, that did happen anyway, but it would have happened on a grander scale.
And it would have happened to the most, some of the most vulnerable people as well. I mean, and I agree. Like, I understand the concept of UBI. I understand why it would be beneficial if we didn't live in a society in which we elevate the worst among us to positions of power. Because,
we don't do it.
Well, yes, right.
Yeah.
But the system that we we find ourselves living in elevates the worst among us to positions of power. And so, you know, in a perfect world, I would love for for things to, like, we could automate some of these lame jobs that nobody wants to do, and that people could just just get UBI and nobody would have to do these stupid jobs. Like, that to me, that's great. Like, we should want to evolve to that point where less people have to work, more, and they can just relax, they can create, they can invent, they can do all of those things. But we don't live in a system where that's going to work out for us very well. As you said, that will be tied to, it's essentially the social credit thing. And that's coming. That's coming. I mean, they're starting to roll that stuff out in multiple different countries on varying levels, with, different degrees of success and different degrees of pushback. But that's definitely coming.
I think definitely in America and maybe in Europe, it will be not specifically state-based. It will be a corporate thing. And they'll use the argument, as they do with censorship, well, it's a private company, they can do what they want. It's just that the private companies will do what the state wants them to do. And there won't be a formal law about it. It will just be that, obviously, if you want a credit card or a phone or a driver's license, you're going to have to do these things this way. I mean, they were just talking about this at the WEF. They didn't say that's what they were talking about. The Davos conference has just finished. There was a guy there who is the president of Alibaba, which is it's the second biggest e-commerce website in the world. It's like the Chinese Amazon, basically. And he was talking about how they're developing various things, including an app to track your personal carbon footprint.
I saw that.
And an app like Google Maps that will tell you where you want to go and how you want to get there. And if you choose the greenest mode of transport and the greenest route, the most efficient route, you'll get a special reward, which you can spend on their e-commerce platform. And that is essentially, it's a social credit system based on carbon, which will be how the social credit system comes in. It will be either in terms of COVID or in terms of climate change or both.
Yep. Yes. And climate change is the next thing. We're going to see climate lockdown soon too. But yes, you're absolutely right. It will be corporate based because they can't. That's a very sneaky thing that they can do. Well, it's a private company. And that drives me absolutely insane. There is zero gray space in between corporations and the United States government. Zero. It's one and the same.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yes.
It's like saying, no, don't worry. He didn't hit you with his left hand. He hit you with his right hand. They're different things.
No.
But they're joined right in the middle.
Yeah, no, and that's what's so frustrating. I hate that argument people give, that because I'm a free speech, press freedom, anti-censorship activist. I get that all the time. Well, they're a private company. They can do whatever they want. No, they're not. They are not a private company. They work hand in hand with the United States government. There's a revolving door between, I think it was Kamala Harris's, I don't know, press communications director or something, used to work at Twitter. And it's like a cesspool of corruption, and they all are owned and operated by the exact same people. Yes, maybe legally, perhaps currently, they are considered quote unquote private companies, but they are not. They are not. They are not. They are not. They work hand in hand with our government. I mean, Facebook has the Atlantic Council, for God's sake. Henry Kissinger sits on that board. There's nothing private company about that. It's absurd.
The head of digital health at the FDA left the FDA last month, and now he works for Google Health, running, helping create apps to monitor your health and stuff like that. There's so much crossover. It's yes, the same thing. It's all one yes, big tangle.
Yeah. And I'm and so that, tired of that
and
argument.
And that feeds into what you're talking about in your rant with the money and what Assange says in that clip, which is completely right. The 40 billion to Ukraine is not going to Ukraine. And all the people saying, oh, they care more about Ukrainian families than they do about American families. No, they don't give a shit about either. That 40 billion is going to Zelensky, who takes his cut off the top and then sends it right back into the pockets of people at Boeing and Raytheon and stuff.
Yep. That's exactly what it is. And that's the case every single time. That is the case in every single situation where we get involved in a conflict like this, whether it's Syria or Ukraine or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's all the same. It is all the same. War is always a racket.
Just conflicts.
No.
Not even everything. Yes. The American federal taxation system is basically a huge money laundering scheme. Like, yeah. I remember this is a 2005 time when I was still very young and just being woken up to just how terrible the world is. I remember reading this, and I wish I could find it, but it was a long time ago and I wasn't a very organized teenager, so I didn't keep press clippings or anything. But like, I remember someone had done a study of Halliburton operating in Iraq during the war.
Oh.
They contacted a private haulage firm and told them, we want to move X to Y. It doesn't matter what it was. And they got a quote back of something like $50,000. And then they reviewed something similar in a government contract for Halliburton to move something of the same size, the same distance. And it was $6 million. Now, so you've got there effectively $5,950,000 of wasted money that just went straight basically into Dick Cheney's pockets.
Yeah.
And that,
and they do that with everything.
It won't just be war. Yeah. It will be this vaccine. I don't know how much money they gave to Pfizer to give them a vaccine that didn't work. It was billions and billions of dollars. And most of it will have just been straight into people's pockets.
Yes. That's why hammers cost $100,000. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
That's all that's getting pocketed. And that's, you're right. It is. It's not just about war. It really is. That's just kind of how the United States is. That's how it's built. That's like, that's exactly the purpose. I honestly don't know how we combat against that. Like, it always seems very overwhelming when I start to think about what we're up against, because it's, we're really in it. Like, we're really, it's intense what we're up against. And it's very hard for me to imagine a way out of it. All of this stuff, trying to combat against, I mean, we're getting pummeled from every angle, and it's, you know,
I suppose eventually you have to say that all systems built that way, you know, corruption hollows stuff out from the inside, and you're left with a very fragile shell that will eventually collapse. And eventually,
yeah,
that system will collapse. It's the individuals in it aren't interested even in maintaining the system. The very fact they're all in for themselves means it is unsustainable, and eventually it will collapse. And then maybe we will have a chance to actually build back better.
Yes. Not like the weird, creepy globalist slogan kind of way. Yeah. That's so creepy. And that's another thing that creeps me out, that they're so able to do stuff like that. The build back better thing, which they all repeat like robots. And nobody, obviously.
It reeks of psychological research as well. They've obviously done focus groups about it. You need to repeat it this much. It's almost like mass hypnosis.
Yes. And I don't think people realize the degree to which they have studied this stuff. They know what they're doing.
Oh, no.
They
know exactly. That's actually interesting. I was writing something about that this week. It hasn't been published yet, but it will be published next week. So little plug there. But yeah, there's all these psychological experiments that people reference a lot. And yes. What's really important to remember about those is that the people in charge studied those a lot. Mm-hmm. They know the way people think. I mean, it works. You see mass psychology research all day, every day, especially on the internet. There's a reason YouTube videos have always got one capitalized word. And there's a reason people like listicles. You know, people have done research and they know if you put a list in the title, people will click. If you put one word in capitals, people will click. Mm-hmm. If you like leave an ellipsis on the end, people want to know how it finishes. And that's just a very small example. They know that if you repeat a phrase often enough, even if people don't realize they're hearing it, it will start to mean something.
Yes. And it's like, it's really from every angle. We are getting bombarded with that kind of stuff from, I mean, even like the grocery store, the way that a grocery store is set up and designed is intentional and it has been studied and they know exactly where to place products so that you'll be more likely to buy them. And that's why there's candy and magazines and sodas and stuff at the checkout line, because they know what kind of music to play to put you in a more,
The reason they don't put windows in IKEA is that. So you can't see outside. You can't see how long you've been in there.
Yeah. Yes.
If you ever go to a casino in Vegas, you should always play the, if you're going to play the slots, I mean, you shouldn't because it's stupid. But if you're going to, you should always play the ones closest to the bar or closest to the elevators, because they are designed to pay out more so that people wandering past or able to hear from the bar will think they have a chance of winning.
Yes. That's very good. No, this seriously, they know exactly what they're doing. I talk about this all the time. They are very good at this game. It's really, it's kind of extraordinary when you really look at it and the way that they're able to so effectively manage our emotions and our thoughts and all of that stuff. It's terrifying, but also pretty fascinating. Okay, we have to take another quick break. Everybody hang tight. We'll be right back with more right here on TNT Radio.
Fix climate change to save humanity. So says the World Economic Forum in Davos.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
A Kenyan climate activist is claiming that we need to save the world.
We have to act with urgency. We have to fix this problem right now, because frontline communities are not waiting for the impacts of climate change to hit in the future. It's happening right now. And the best that we can do is to fix this right now so that we can actually save all of humanity.
Yes, that's right. We must entrust Klaus Schwab, Prince Charles, John Kerry, Al Gore with saving all of humanity. We've now reached the point where the World Economic Forum believes that saving the poor from alleged future climate change is only possible by making life unaffordable and miserable for them now. That's our Great Reset in action. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Bad government, climate change alarmists, vaccine mandates. The threats to your freedom are many, but that's where we can help.
Hear more truths.
TNT Radio.
All the time.
Our truth shall set you free.
Today's News Talk Radio.
TNT.
Hello, we are back. This is the Misty Winston Show here on TNT Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm joined by Kit Knightley, who's a journalist and the editor at Off Guardian, which is a really fantastic independent outlet. Don't be scared by the warnings. Don't be scared. If you go to click on Off Guardian, they're going to give you a warning, but don't be scared. There's fantastic information. They're doing a great job over there, the whole crew. So I just thought of something in the break that I wanted to talk to you about, because I know that you've covered this. So we have this whole, in my opinion, don't come for me, manufactured food crisis, right? That they've been kind of hyping for a while now. It's been kind of a slow build up to this thing. And now we're starting to see randomly, and I'm sure totally coincidentally, food storage plants or whatever, warehouses, or that suddenly they're all catching on fire for some reason. It's really strange how that's happening. So what's your take on this? Because I know that you've covered this a bit, and I've been trying to warn everybody to learn how to grow your own food if you can, because they will use food
good advice
against you. Yes. Yeah.
Because, I mean, I suppose when I get right down to it, we don't know there will be a food crisis, but we do know they will say there is. Now, that might just be a question of pretending the scarcity to jack up prices. It might be a question of holding back food supplies just to worry people. It might genuinely be a campaign to ruin the food supply. I mean, the kind of thing that you sort of learn to question as you do like media analysis, which is what Off Guardian started as, essentially, was just analyzing how the media works, is I don't know, A, that those food supply places did burn down. I mean, they seem to have done. I'm not saying they didn't, but like all it is in the news. And even supposing they did, I don't know that there is a more than usual, I don't know how often industrial fires happen. You know, maybe it happened. But what I do know is that they're being reported.
Yes.
Which means what I need to ask is why. Because, you know, if all these places burned down and it wasn't in the interests of the press to mention it, they wouldn't mention it. So maybe they're being set, maybe there is sabotage, maybe there isn't, but they're certainly trying to panic people by reporting about them. You saw how they manufactured the roll-on toilet paper for some reason.
Oh, like, my God. That was so weird.
It was so weird. Why that? It was almost like chose a product, which was silly. And we're like, see if we can make them panic by toilet paper. Tell everybody there isn't very much of it.
Yeah,
and they did. Absolutely. Ugh. And I knew people who worked in supply who were saying there isn't a shortage of it. I don't know why they're doing this.
That was really weird. That was a really bizarre phenomenon. And I do think that you're right. I think that was intentional. Let's see what we can freak them out about. And because, again, they're studying this stuff. They do these things to watch our reactions and watch how we handle those situations and how they're able to. They're practicing.
They're talking about the next pandemic all the time. And the next pandemic will have learned from this one. Mm-hmm. I mean, talking about the next pandemic itself is very strange.
Yeah. And
this is the first pandemic I remember of any real note. I mean, they talk about SARS, but SARS was like...
That was not people. A
pandemic. It wasn't a pandemic. It was barely a thing. This is the only major pandemic, certainly of my lifetime. I'm pretty sure even going back like a generation before that, I was born in the 80s. So the talking about the next one is insane.
Yes. I mean,
there isn't going to be a next one for another 70 or 80 years, supposing this one was real. So clearly there is some kind of like learn and go again, you know?
Oh, for sure. And I think that's, they do this all the time. They kind of, they'll start something, they'll push us until, we start to kind of push back or we start to resist, and then they back off just enough to keep us complacent. And then the next time they're able to push us a little bit further. Yeah. And I think but you're right. The idea that they're talking about the next pandemic, and there's like this WHO treaty, which is a massive power grab, and really gives, just unaccountable power to the WHO to decide what is a pandemic, when is a pandemic is declared, how we handle it. There's that whole 100-day vaccine, which is absurd. You cannot invent and create and develop a vaccine for a disease that, I would assume didn't exist before you needed to have the vaccine in a 100 days.
Even supposing you could manufacture it in that time, you can't test it in that time.
Right.
Like, well, the most you can say, and this is if you made the vaccine in a day, is that it's still safe after 3 months. And obviously that's not what's going to happen. You can't possibly safety test something like that. I mean, everybody said at the time, it's one of those facts that just got memory hold really fast. But, you know, vaccine experts were saying at the beginning of the COVID vaccine pandemic, when it wasn't controversial, this is going to be difficult because in order to make a vaccine for this disease, it's going to take at least 3 or 4 years. And that would be a rush. Usually it takes 5 to 10. And suddenly all those experts that said that in March 2020 stopped saying it really soon. When it turns out, actually, no, we can make a vaccine by January. Just give us a minute.
Just give us a minute. Yeah, and either those people stopped talking about it or they were smeared, slandered, and censored.
Yeah.
Because there were doctors who were trying to speak out about it, and those people were just, vilified. was nuts. These, I mean, it's like well-known, respected doctors who are suddenly like crazy cuckoo pants conspiracy theorists. They're not to be trusted. And that was just something to witness. And that was effective too. They were very, very effective in their ability to smear and slander a lot of these people. I've talked to some of those people on my show. That's very troubling that they're able to, for me, watching the way that they were able to manage the discourse, because as far as I'm concerned, first of all, I don't like censorship, period. But for something like COVID, which literally impacts everybody on Earth, literally all of the people, for me, all of the conversations should be allowed. Every question should be asked. Everything should be out on the table. Nothing should be too stupid or controversial to discuss. And that was just not the case. You were not allowed to talk about any potential early treatments. You were not allowed to talk about, I mean, anything that was outside the approved narrative. The level of discourse was so tiny. It was like, here's the approved conversation and that's it. And that was really scary.
I mean, it was, but it was also really revealing.
Yes.
Like very, very early. Like there was the Stanford guy, Johnny Ioannidis, who, you know, not at all like a flaky counterculture type. He's a professor of biostatistics at Stanford. He's a well-respected statistician. And he comes out with his data that says, oh, actually, looking at the raw data here, it doesn't look like this is going to be as big a threat as you are saying it is. And clearly, this is a guy who's worked in academia and expects an academic response. Expects people to say, oh, well, either be reassured that he's correct or offer a counterargument on academic data in some way. And instead, he's suddenly smeared as some kind of libertarian. And the very fact that the system showed nobody wanted the reassuring data that early on was a sign that it was going to become a thing.
Yes. Yes. That and also the way that everything was so arbitrarily applied was...
Yeah,
those were two things that really, because I mean, when COVID first started, I was skeptical, but I was, you know, I wasn't really sure what was going on. I think a lot of people kind of started off that way. I was definitely skeptical. But I think that, you know, watching the way that the level of the way that they were trying to manage the discourse and then also the way that the regulations were all arbitrary. I think one of the first things, and I've told the story numerous times, but one of the first things, there was an NFL game that was going on. And, you know, so there's these huge full grown men playing a full American football, playing a full contact sport, flying. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, like spit flying, sweat flying, trash talking, like they're in each other's faces, they're tackling each other. All of that was fine.
Bear
but then the two teams went to their locker room.
Offensive lines. Yeah.
Yeah. But then they go to their locker room and the winners are celebrating in the locker room without masks on and they got a fine for that. And I was like, wait a minute. wait, that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense.
And they're going over to the sidelines and having to put masks on while they sit there and like towel themselves down of sweat and just throw the towel down on the floor and stuff. Like,
yeah.
They're all sharing water bottles over there as well.
You know, you're right. Offensive line and defensive line are like literally 6 inches apart, like trash talking in each other's faces. And that was okay. But you better wear your mask while you're celebrating in the locker room. Or we're going to hit you with a fine. That was just so stupid. All of it was just, and there's just, and that was early on. Like that was very early on in the whole COVID thing. And then we just saw so many of those same or similar circumstances. Nancy Pelosi held some luncheon for a bunch of donors and the only people wearing masks were the servants. AOC went to the Met Gala.
Picture of Hillary at the Met Gala as well with the, the black valet on his knees.
Yes.
In his mask. I mean, that was bad optics.
It's almost like they're trolling us intentionally with that stuff, you know? Like just to see if they can get away with it. Because it's so blatant that it's hard for me to imagine that they don't know what they're doing. Because that is, it's pretty bad. That was a bad look. That was a pretty bad look. And the same thing with AOC. I mean, she's in the room getting ready and everybody's like surrounding her, fawning over how great she looks in her stupid dress. And the only people wearing masks are the servants that are surrounding her. She's not wearing one. Her boyfriend wasn't wearing one, but everybody else has got masks on. And it's like, this makes no sense. I don't know how anybody with two brain cells to rub together would still be buying into this, but people do. And there you have it. Okay. We only have a couple minutes left. Tell everybody where they can find you and where they can find and support the work. Please support independent media.
You can find us, you can find our website at off-guardian.org. Where I am on Twitter at @Kit_Knightley with K, silent K, Knightley. Our other editor, Cat Black, is on Twitter at Cat Black, all one word, double T. And Off Guardian itself is on Twitter at Off Guardian Zero. That's a long story. And you can follow us on Telegram as well, but I'm afraid I don't remember the Telegram thing.
You should just
be able to search. Just search on Telegram for us, you'll find us.
Yeah, perhaps, yeah. Or I'm sure somebody can put it up on Twitter or something. But yeah, Telegram has been... I've been going to Telegram a lot more now. I think Twitter is getting a little, well, I mean, it's been out of control, but it's really getting bad. The censorship is really getting bad. The way that, I mean, I'm shadow banned like crazy. I'm sure you are too. It's nuts.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks so much for coming. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on. I would love to have you back after your new piece that you mentioned comes out, because that sounds fascinating. So I'll hit you up about that. Okay, everybody, hang tight. I have more coming up for you right after this here on TNT Radio.